Well, we're looking at our last parable in our series, and we're looking at the parable of the 10 minas or miners. I can't say miners because I think of the little guys with the head torches on, so I have to say minas just to get that comedy image out of my head. Well, just this week I received a very kind email from a gentleman offering to make me a millionaire. Very kind of him. It said this: "Dear Mr. Peace, I'm writing to tell you about James Packer's latest investment strategy that has experts in awe and the big banks terrified." Very kind of him to let me in on this secret. "Thousands of Australians are already raking in millions of dollars from home using this wealth loophole. Mr. Packer appeared on Channel 10's The Project and urged all Australians to invest and make the most of this wealth loophole, which is guaranteed to make you a millionaire within 3 to 4 months. Don't delay in this amazing opportunity. Do it today. Yours sincerely, Ivor Scam." Well, ladies and gentlemen, have I got the opportunity for you. Needless to say, I didn't invest. Complete rip-off from some bloke. I don't even think James Packer went on the TV. I start with that story because today we are talking investments and returns. We're in our final parable of our series looking at Jesus' parables in Luke's Gospel. And we hit this parable, the parable of the 10 minas. And it's a story of a nobleman who travels to a faraway land to return as king. And before he goes, he gives each of his 10 servants the 10 minas. As Ted says, it's the equivalent of about 3 months' wages, 30 grand. And he gives it to them to invest on his behalf while he is away. Now, although this is a made-up story, Jesus has made it up, it is based on a real-life story, the real-life King Herod the Great, who, when he passed on his throne to his real-life son, Archelaus, he went off for a period to Rome. So he was governing a province in the Roman Empire, and those kings would go off to Rome to receive their power and their authority, and they would go away for months, even years, and then would come back as king. That was customary at the time, and that is what Jesus is tapping into here, that a future king would go away to receive his power and come back to reign as king. They would go away as noblemen or heirs, request authority from Rome, and then come back as king of the province and rule as king. And this parable is in our Bibles to ask followers of Jesus, to ask them and to challenge them, how are you investing the life that Jesus has given you? You may well have heard this parable taught as the minas representing the money that God has given us to invest, or you may have heard it taught as a story about how we invest the talents that God has given. People kind of hear the parable of the talents in Matthew's gospel, and they think talents, the things that we can do, not knowing that talents was a sum of money as well. But what we have here is a vision, a question to ask us how we are using what God has given us. And the clue to what the minas are and what they represent is there in our big theme verse of the service today, Luke 19:10. Jesus' big purpose statement in Luke's gospel: "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. That is Jesus' mission statement in Luke's gospel. And Jesus gives himself this title, the Son of Man. The Son of Man is the title of God's promised king with all authority in heaven and on earth. God's true king, God's promised king who would rescue and rule, the king of the universe. And it is the title that Jesus gives to himself. And it says that if you're a follower of Jesus, then Jesus has sought you and he has saved you. You were once lost, but now you've been found by the Son of Man. You were once outside the banquet, but now you have been brought into the banquet of heaven. And that is amazing. God's amazing grace for us who didn't deserve that rescue, who received that rescue because Jesus, the Son of Man with all authority, came and sought you out, sought me out, pursued you, loved you, chased you in your mess and in your brokenness, in your lostness, and brought you in to his amazing grace. And if you are a Christian, if you are a follower of Jesus, if Jesus has sought and saved you, then Jesus has handed you your life. He has loved you, he has saved you, and he has given you a new life. And just like the nobleman gives the servants minas, so King Jesus has gone away and has given us a life and asked us to invest that life into his business, into the business of the Son of Man. And do you know what that kingly business is? Luke 19:10, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. This parable really comes as a climax in the travel narrative of Jesus' journeys towards Jerusalem. And the travel narrative climaxes in a meeting with Zacchaeus as he kind of heads into Jerusalem. And you remember Zacchaeus? Remember Zacchaeus? Remember the song that used to sing in kids' church? Zacchaeus was a very little man. A very little man was he. He climbed into a sycamore tree for a savory one. Is that right? Yeah. I didn't do kids' church, but I remember it. I remember it from preachers singing it to me. So I've sung it to you. And Zacchaeus is really the epitome of a lost son of Israel, a lost son of God. He is a Jew who has become a traitor to his people by serving the occupying Roman forces as a tax collector. He has become rich by ripping off the people he is collecting taxes from. And what's significant about Zacchaeus is that he is lost. He is lost spiritually and he is lost physically in the crowd. He's a wee little man, a funny little man in the crowd. And Jesus seeks and saves him. He goes around his house for tea and he says, today salvation has come to this house since he also, Zacchaeus also, is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. So that is what is in our heads as we hit this parable of the 10 minas. It is the business of the king, the business of the Son of Man to seek and to save the lost. And if you're a Christian here today, this parable asks you, how are you investing the life that Jesus has given you into this kingly business? Now, if you're not a Christian here today, that's perfectly okay and you're very welcome. But Jesus says to you, you are lost. You are here this morning because Jesus got you here. Jesus is seeking you and he wants to save you. And I'd love you to pray a prayer to invite him into your life this morning, if that's you. If you are a Christian, though, Jesus calls you to be a servant engaged in this kingly business of seeking and saving the lost, of sharing the news of Jesus' rescue, of praying for the work of Jesus' rescue, of using not just your money, not just your talents, but your time, your talents, and your treasure, everything. The way that God has wired you, the friendships that God has given you, the opportunities that God has put before you, to use all of it, your life, for his business, investing in the business of the king of seeking and saving the lost. So I'm going to work through this parable. I've really got three questions for us to consider. And I'd love you just to jot them down if you've got a pen and take them away and mull them over, because this parable is designed to be a self-diagnosis.
Only you can diagnose it. I can't do that. But I'm going to ask us these questions from this parable. The first question is this. Who is your king? Who is your king? A nobleman, verse 12, a nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and then return. Calling 10 of his servants, he gave them 10 minas and said to them, engage in business until I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, we do not want this man to reign over us. See, there are two pressures on the servants here not to invest in the business of the king. I'll just grab some water. Two pressures to not to invest in the business of the king. The first, of course, is the absence of the nobleman. He's not physically there. And we all know what the teenage kids do when the parents are away for the weekend. They phone up their mates and they go crazy. They don't do what they're meant to do. They party. And that is the pressure here, that the nobleman is away. But also there is pressure from verse 14. The nobleman has asked his servants to engage in a market into a nation that hates him and does not want the nobleman to be king over them. I don't think I've ever spotted verse 14 before. See, the nobleman is calling them to sell wallaby shirts in New Zealand, or Scotch fillet at a vegetarians' convention, or to sell Bibles to the Taliban. He is asking them to invest in business in a country that hates him. He's asking them to engage in the king's business in a country where the citizens hate the king. And the master challenges his servants to live boldly and publicly as his servants, using his resources, unafraid of the enemies, confident in the future as his future, confident in the future where the king will come back and reign. So Jesus asks you and me, he asks you and me to be his servants in a world that hates him. To invest in his business in a world that wants nothing of him. To seek and save lost people to a world that doesn't want to be sought and saved. To speak the good news of Jesus to a world that thinks the good news of Jesus is evil. Jesus wants us to stand visibly tall as followers of Jesus in a world that will malign you. In a world that hates you and sideline you, just like it did the king when he was on earth. And the temptation for you and me is that we would not engage in the business of the king. That we would keep our heads down, that we would keep our mouths shut to discreetly come to church on a Sunday morning so that we can tick the Jesus box and then go from this place and blend in with the rest of the world for the rest of the week, hoping that no one notices our secret Jesus hobby on a Sunday morning. And we can get into this mindset of thinking, well, he's not around. He can't call us into his office. He can't do a 360 review of our Christian life. Jesus isn't here. I can do what I like. I can party. But Jesus wants more for us. Jesus wants more from us than a secret Sunday morning Jesus hobby. Jesus wants more from you. He is the King of the universe. He is the Son of Man, and he has given us a life. He's given us a fresh start, and he's given you the privilege. He's given me the privilege and the honor of investing our lives into his business. He doesn't need to do that. He could do what he please. He could zap the gospel into our heads with a radio beam or a something or other. He doesn't need us to do it. But he calls us into his business because he wants us to know joy, and he wants us to know the privilege and the thrill that comes with doing the work of Jesus in his world, of knowing the thrill of seeing people come to know Jesus, from going from death, from going on a road to hell, to coming to know life to the full in Jesus' name. I had the privilege of seeing two people come to know Jesus this week. There is nothing better than that. It's our work. Those two people are the result of our work. That is our business. That should put a spring in our step and joy in our hearts. There is no greater thrill than seeing people come to be saved by Jesus. And the question is Jesus your king? Is Jesus your king? Or is he your hobby? Is he your king, or is he your genie in the lamp that you rub into hard times and hope that he will appear and sort your issues out? Is he your king? Is he your king? A British journalist once asked Mother Teresa how she kept going, knowing that she could never meet the needs of all the dying in the streets of Calcutta. She replied, "I'm not called to be successful, I'm called to be faithful." So you and I, as followers of Jesus, as we wait for him to return, are called to be faithful in his business of seeking and saving the lost. Let me ask you to consider, who is your king? Who is your king? Second question for us to consider this morning is, how are you investing? How are you investing? Let's pick it up at verse 15. When he returned, having received the kingdom, he ordered these servants to whom he'd given the money to be called to him, that he might know what they had gained by doing business. The first came before him, saying, "Lord, your mina has made 10 minas more." And he said to him, "Well done, good servant. Because you have been faithful in a very little, you shall have authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, "Lord, your mina has made 5 minas. And he said to him, "You are to be over 5 cities. Then another came, saying, "Lord, here is your mina, which I kept laid away in a handkerchief, for I was afraid of you, because you are a severe man." The nobleman returns as king, and just like the guy on The Apprentice, Mark Burris, the servants line up and they show him show him their returns on his investment. The first says, "Your mina has made 10. The second says, "Your mina has made 5. Now, we're not told about the other 7 servants, and we're not told what they did as a side hustle, whether they started a dog washing business or whether they invested their minas in cryptocurrency. What we are told about is their faithfulness and their reward from the king for their faithfulness. And we're meant to see that. We're meant to see that the king will reward people for his faithfulness, that Jesus will reward us for our faithfulness. We're also meant to feel the shock and the weight of the third servant. He fears the return of the king, so he wraps up his mina in his snotty handkerchief and sits on it until the king returns. And we're meant to read this parable and we're meant to go, "You idiot, why did you go and do that? You could have just put it in the bank and at least earned some interest off that mina." We're meant to be thinking, why did you just not do something with it? But as we think that, many of us will be doing exactly the same as we think that. We'll be doing exactly the same as what that servant did with the mina. We'll be doing exactly the same with our life. Oh, we're happy to take the salvation that Jesus offers us. We're happy to take the benefits. But we can easily do the equivalent of wrapping up the life that Jesus has given us in a hanky and doing nothing with it. I've said each week that these parables are like a velvet hammer. They are stories designed to stroke us with a warm, fuzzy feeling, but then they hit us with a hard, challenging truth. And the hammer Jesus hits us with this morning is that it is possible to do nothing with the salvation and the life that Jesus gives us. It's possible just to sit on it, to wrap it up, put it in our pockets. For your Christian life to be nothing more than attending church on a Sunday morning. And we can easily justify it, just like the servant did in the parable. We can justify doing nothing with our lives. When we're working, we can justify our lack of investment in the king's business by saying, "Oh, I'll do it later. I've got to provide for my family now." Or we can spiritualize our work when deep down we know that the only business we're investing in is the business of ourselves. Do that when we're working and when we're retired. We can think, "Oh, there's plenty of other people who've got more energy to do the king's business. I know, I'll delegate it to the pastor and the keen beans. They can do it so that I can get on with what I've retired for. I can get on with making the lawn that I've always wanted. I can get on with seeing the places I've always wanted to see. I can get on playing the golf that I always wanted to play. I can get on with completing the passion projects that I've always wanted to do, but have been too busy working for to do." Now, none of those things are wrong in themselves, so don't hear me saying you shouldn't do those things. But hear me say, use those things to invest in the king's business. Invest the passions that God has given you. Invest the skills that he has given you. Invest the money that you're sitting on that you will just leave behind. Invest the time that you have now into the business of the king. Now that will look different for each and every one of us. Some of us won't have energy, so some of us will be able to pray more than others. Some of us will have excess financial resources that we can invest that others don't have. Other of us will have energy or will have niche skills that God has given us to use now in this season. I once lived with a family when I was a student. The husband was a lawyer. The wife was an early childhood teacher. And as I was living with them, their washing machine went on the blink. And their son-in-law came around and said, "Oh, Jill, you should get a new washing machine." And she replied, "Oh, the new washing machine's coming round for lunch on Sunday morning." They'd chosen to use the money that they would have spent on a new washing machine on investing and funding a missionary at the local university. They had potential to earn big. He was a lawyer. He was one of the best lawyers around. She was a great teacher. She had the potential to earn big, but yet he chose to be a legal aid lawyer to defend people that couldn't afford a defense. And she was a teacher who worked with broken and lost kids so that she would break the cycles of their family homes. And with the money that they had, they were investing in the kingdom, in the king's business. It was a beautiful family to be part of. It changed me forever. And I want to call you today to invest in the king's business. I don't know how you're going to do that. Don't hear me as being one of those prosperity preachers saying, "Give all your money." I'm calling you to invest your life now, the season that you're in, the time that you've got left, the resources that you have to invest in the business of the king. I don't know whether you noticed as you look around this church, but we've got a generation that is missing. Have a look. Look around. There is a generation missing. That is not on me. That is not on me. That is on you. Okay? Hear these words. I don't get sober very often. That is on you. There is a generation missing. And some of you have been coming here for decades. And a generation is not here. I don't know what's happened, but where are your kids? Where are your grandkids? When I arrived, people said to me, "Oh, it'd be great to see more young people here. You could bring some young people." Well, we delivered some. We bred our own. And we have quadrupled the size of the kids' ministry here. What have you done? what have you done for the kids' ministry here? You've bred kids. Where are they? They've bred grandkids. Where are they? There might be other churches that might be engaged. What have you done? I'm asking you to diagnose yourself. What are you investing in? What do you desire? What do you do with the vision that we want to see more kids here? We want to see the next generation here. What do you do with that? Do you just shout at the pastor and say, we want you to do that? Or do you say, what can I do with the resources, the time, the talent, and the treasure to see the next generation raised? What are you funding? What are you investing your time in? What are you investing your money in? What are you getting behind in your prayer life? Are you just praying for a long distant country miles away? That is a good thing to do, pray for overseas mission. But are you praying that God will be at work here? He is at work here. And we need to fuel that work with our prayers and our effort and our investment. There are many ways that you can do that. You've employed a pastor to lead this church. Get behind me. Put your hand up to do things. Pray that the Lord would prosper the work here. Pray that you might perhaps just bite your tongue when I suggest that we do something that will help bring in the new generation. Just say, okay, I'm precious about that, but it's okay because we're investing in the next generation. I've kind of floated the idea of perhaps getting changing the pews for seats. And a few reactions have had, gasp. There are things about our church that are comfortable for us, but are barriers for the next generation. I don't know whether you knew that. There are things about our church that are familiar to us, but are intimidating for people in Rockingham. So that's just one way you can do. Have a view for the next generation. How can we be investing in God's work of seeking and saving the lost? There are some I know who will be here, and you are Christian. You've been Christian for years, and you've lost your mojo. You've lost your mojo. That's not your fault. You've lost your mojo. And you've lost the vision that Jesus has given for your life. You've lost the passion that you once had when you first became a Christian. I want to help you in that. I want to encourage you. Just this week, why not take a Bible? If you've lost your Bible, or it hasn't been open for years, or it's got those of these and nows and all that kind of thing, grab a Bible. You're welcome to take one. I've got one in large print. And read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And reacquaint yourself with your old friend and your first love. Start there. If you're hearing, oh, Andy wants me to do something else, no, don't hear that. Come at a place of love for your Savior. Reignite your passion for him again. Get to know your old friend and pray that God would give you a heart to show you his vision for Rockingham, for this church, for your life, so that you might invest your life with joy. How are you investing? Well, thirdly and more briefly, what will Jesus say? What will Jesus say? Verse 21. You take what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. He said to him, I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I was a severe man, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank? And at my coming, I might have collected it with interest. And he said to those who stood by, take the mina from him and give it to the one who has the 10 minas. And they said to him, Lord, he has 10 minas. I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. But as these enemies of mine, who did not want me to reign over them, bring them here and slaughter them before me. Gosh, these are scary words, aren't they? Scary, challenging words. And we're meant to feel the weight of them. We're meant to feel the weight of these words. When we accept Jesus, we are saved once for all. But Jesus will look at our work. He will look at how we've invested what he's given us. And he will judge us. He will judge us. These are scary words. In Matthew 21, possibly the most scariest words in the Bible, Matthew 7:21 says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do mighty, mighty works in your name? And I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me. Challenging words. I pray that none of us will ever hear them. But take this warning. Take the weight of this passage and ask yourself, what will Jesus say to you? We should long to hear good and faithful servant on that day. Not get away from me, I didn't know you. We should long to hear those words. There's a song that is a Matt Redman song. It's called Show Me the Way of the Cross. And it's got a verse in it that goes like this. It says, I've given like a beggar, but lived like the rich. And crafted myself a more comfortable cross. Yet what I am called to is deeper than this. It's time you had my whole life. You can have it all. Jesus, this parable starts with Zacchaeus and Jesus saying, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And it ends with Jesus on his way to Jerusalem to die for us. To show us the pattern of what it means to be God's person in God's world, of suffering now and glory later. Jesus goes to the cross to win us our salvation and give us our life. He lays down his life, suffering now for glory later, so that we will rise again. You see, the beautiful thing of the gospel is that Jesus doesn't just give us one life. He gives us two lives. He gives us this life on earth, and he gives us a resurrection life in the new creation where there will be no crying, no mourning, no pain, no suffering. A day is coming where the pain that you feel now will be no more. That is set. Jesus has guaranteed that. He has written the guarantee in his blood for you. He gives us two lives so that we can give this one up for him, so that we can invest this life like the mina. We can invest it so that he will use it, so that he will seek and to save the lost people in our lives. And there is great joy. We don't do it to earn our salvation, but we do it because Jesus has won our salvation. So let me ask you, will you give this life up for Jesus? Will you change this week? Will you invest this week? And will you look forward to that day when Jesus puts his arm around you, wipes your tears from your eyes, and says, well done, good and faithful servant. Let's pray.